The luckiest man in McDonald Island will not be hurt at this time due to the tariffs on all the penguins and all the whammies. The whammies are currently revolting. In its place, we present the following.
This is Gordon Pepper, and the whammies are revolting, and I don't like their faces either.
The whammies are revolting?
Because
they are not happy.
They are not. And this week, among other weeks, we are all in our feelings about a number of things between Survivor and the race and Jeopardy and the drag race. And oh, by this way, this little movie that just came out that I know we have opinions on.
I have thoughts.
Oh, I have feelings. I have thoughts. I totally have thoughts.
Yes.
Which is one of the reasons why our game this week is not about destruction, but about creation and improvement. Because again, this is Passover week, so we need to think about helping our better man and our game show fan. And we will get to that after we get to this. From somewhere in Whammyland, this episode of WLTI is on.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Whee!
Welcome to the 486th episode, 14 to 500 here at 5-1. This is We Love to Interrupt. I am your strength and conditioning coach, all-around good guy, and sometime movie critic. I'm here with my brothers from another mother, Chico Alexander and Gordon Pepper. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing well, hope you are.
I am good. Now the question is, are you Siskel, Ebert, Leonard Maltin, or John Lovitz?
I'm John Lovitz in this case because we are reviewing The Luckiest Man in America, the long-awaited movie produced and starring Paul Walter Hauser as Michael Larson, the man who broke Press Your Luck because he memorized the patterns and took them for $110,237. The movie opened up in limited release this past Friday, April 4th. All around the country, and produced by IFC Films, and it tells the story, it tells the story of the day of Michael Larson's taping. Now, who wants to go first on this?
Let's do a bit of a brief setup of that day in May in 1984, where Michael Larson, in his ice cream truck, arrives in Los Angeles to try out for Press Your Luck. He manages to secure a spot on the show against Ed Long and Janie Litras and proceeds to completely own the place. Meanwhile, backstage, Bill Carruthers, the producer, is trying to figure out what is going on with his game, with his board, and with Michael's brain. All the while, it seems like the pressure is getting to the quote-unquote luckiest man in America. Paul Walter Hauser plays Michael Larson. Walton Goggins plays Peter Tamarkin. And David Strathern plays Bill Carruthers.
And, okay.
Let's start with good here, because there is some good here. The set is impeccable.
I'm actually not even going to do good or bad on this. I'm going to critique this. I think you will get more value for this movie if you're not a game show fan and you don't know anything about this. I really think that. Because
I agree.
A game show fan, I spent most of this movie going, well, that didn't happen. No, that didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
Some of this did happen. But why are they focusing on this instead of that? I understand what they were doing. I completely and utterly don't agree with what they're doing in terms of how they wanted to set it up, how they wanted to personalize Larson, how they, there's so much, like, I knew I was not going to like this movie when I saw the coming attractions, and I'm like, well, no, that's not what happened. There's also a lot of embellishment in the movie that I really didn't think was needed. I think the movie itself and the real life thing, that's what they really should have focused on. Chico, floor is yours.
I have to agree with you on that. I mean, this is one of those cases where you put Samir Oliveros, the writer, co-writer and producer of this film, into a room and you interview him about what they got right and what they got wrong. He's going to say something to the tune of, I did not make a movie for fans of game shows. I made a movie for fans of movies. And because this is based on actual events, with certain events and people being compartmentalized by...
The whole thing in the beginning basically said things were fictionalized and dramatized for dramatic effect.
Because as a man much wiser than any of us once said, you cannot rewrite history, not one line.
Mm-hmm. So,
but the problem here is that they did.
Yeah, they did.
And it's I'm sorry, Jay. Go.
Yeah, because even from the opening scene where they imply that Michael Larson stole another person's audition spot to get in, okay, under a different name. He didn't do that, as far as I know, and as far as we know, okay? There were so many things that got wrong. No game show would sabotage a contestant by lights or taking away stuff. Okay? No game show would vet a person within the game itself.
And no game show would pause production simply to allow somebody to take a phone call. Wouldn't happen. Jay, you and I have been through the ringer before. In one of the tightest rooms in America in Jeopardy. We are basically babysat for the entire day.
You couldn't even get 5 feet away from someone before. Where are you going? What are you doing?
Yeah.
This felt like, and I think you'll understand the analogy here, even though it's a great movie, but it was clearly a work of fiction. This was Slumdog Pressure Walk.
I don't know. Slumdog was pretty entertaining. And you know what?
But you understand what I mean. They had all this drama stuff that you would never see on a real game show.
That is correct.
But you knew from the get-go that it was fictional. The whole thing was fictional. So you knew that going in. This was based on a real story. And you fictionalized the real story, and you did not have to. There was no reason for it.
And the whole talk show sequence was unnecessary.
I didn't get that. I mean, what was even the point of that?
I mean, you know what I wish that they sort of did? And you're right. This was one day on Fresher Look. But they really, it would have been nice for them to do the aftermath. It would have been nice for them to, you know, maybe end it with Whammy, Fresher Look, and they brought everybody back and Lawson. And then having the whole, and there was no Whammy doll in the 80s version of Fresher Look either.
No, not at all. There was no Whammy. There was no Whammy mascot. No. It seemed like, honestly, the people who wrote this movie had no idea what a game show was about.
The people that wrote this movie said, you know what? If we could recreate the Larson moment, here's how I think that it should have gone.
Yeah. And
that's what it felt like.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Paul Walter Hauser was incredible as Michael Larson, I thought. He got all of the emotional beats down. He did what he... It was like watching Michael Larson actually play...
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
I'm not going to agree with you there. Jay, go.
No, because what happened was is that they treated him as he even portrayed him as a criminal instead of an odd duck. Okay? Michael Larson was weird. Okay? He was weird. He was not, I mean, was he a criminal? Yeah. But he didn't use criminal wiles to get on Press Your Luck, if you understand what I mean.
Everything he did on Press Your Luck, and we know this because, hey, they had a whole ass documentary, two whole ass documentaries on the subject, and they interviewed everybody who was in that room, who was still alive at the time.
I don't even know why you have to even bring the criminal element in there. I mean, that's, if you saw the Game Show Network documentary, that was done so well in terms of nailing it.
It's on the internet. You should find it. It's called Big Box, the Michael Larson story. It was from 2005. That is the source material and stuff that you should be using for this particular thing. This thing was an absolute disaster. It really was. It was horrible.
Well, I've said this before and I'll say it again. The movie told a story in that it succeeded, but it did not tell the story. And I guess I'm sort of disappointed that they could have told the story and didn't. But they told a story, and plus the set design was incredible. So I cannot give it a passing grade, but at the same time, I cannot give it a failing grade. It is a D. A D for disaster.
Nothing really saved the movie. I mean, I'm actually going to outright fail it. F. There's nothing good about this movie. There really isn't. It's a waste of 90 minutes of your time. If you want to see a good fictionalized movie, go see Quiz Show.
I'm going to be a little bit different on this because I'm going to give it two different grades.
All right. Yes.
If you are a game show fan, this is an F you. There's no question about it. It's I don't know what they were trying to do here, but it fails from a game show standpoint. It fails as a movie on Press Your Luck, and it just fails as a movie. Now, if you've never seen anything and you want a game show fiction and you take your brain out and think, okay, this is a game show movie that even though it may be based on real life events, it's fiction. I'm going to almost agree with Chico. I'm going to go C minus. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but you are going to get more of a value if you walk in there not knowing anything about Michael Larson or Press Your Luck.
I agree with that. Totally. That makes sense. But honestly, this is very disappointing. This is just really disappointing for me. Well, because this was a very highly anticipated movie. This has been in circles for a while.
Well, it's a highly anticipated movie, and it got really good early reviews, so you're like, oh, this is going to be really good. No.
Well,
I mean, for me, I'm going to say this. You know, we joke around. Last week we did, or a couple weeks ago, we did the March Madness tournament. I know it's not a game show, but for me, this is going to be a very high seed.
Yeah, you get the Bart Simpson cake that says, at least you tried.
Yeah, right, you know what, you tried.
Yeah. Right, and you know what? I think we can do a play-in game for this. I think Luckiest Man gets in next year as a play-in.
Play-in movie.
Luckiest Man versus Woman of the Hour. That's going to be fun.
Oh, there you go. That's the play-in right there.
That's the play-in. Mark it down right now.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but speaking of playing in, we need what's his name?
Yeah, here's what's his name.
From the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Studios, this is Jeopardy!
Thank you, what's his name?
I'm sorry!
He called your name four times, Jason
Johnny Gilbert!
Block.
Thank you, there it is! Oh my God, he called my name, he called your name. Excuse me, I'm having a brain fart. I'm sorry. Yes. Let's go to Celebrity Jeopardy first. And people that are playing tonight are Roy Wood, who is playing for Roy Wood Jr. for I See Me, Inc., Natalie Morales playing for Happy Trails for Kids, and Robin Thede playing for Women in Film. After the Triple Jeopardy round, Robin has 13-1, Roy has 18-5, and Natalie just gets to play because she ended with negative 1,300. Okay?
But they spot her the money to play the final.
Right. So the category is in the dictionary. The clue. And I love this. The Oxford English Dictionary includes a 34-letter, 14-syllable synonym for fabulous. Its definition cites this Disney film. Thank you.
All together now. What is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Even though the sound of it.
That's the word, not the film.
Oh, son of a bitch!
I was looking for the film.
Read the epic question, Chico. What is Mary Poppins?
Or if you're on The Simpsons, Sherry Bobbins. Anyway.
Me.
Go for it.
What is down and out in Washington, D.C.?
Very good.
By the way, trivia fact. Yep. Down and Out in Beverly Hills was produced by Disney.
Yeah.
Touchstone Pictures, specifically.
That is correct.
So, Natalie doubles up. Roy, unfortunately, gets it wrong. But if Roy would have gotten it right, he would have gotten in because Robin made a very incorrect bet, let's just say.
Very.
She only bet $100, but she got it right. So she moves on to the final with W. Kamau Bell. We'll get the third finalist next week. Now, over to regular Jeopardy. We have a new Tournament of Champions contender in Bryce Wagon, Oregon, who went five games and was defeated by Mike Dawson this past Friday. Mike won Monday and Tuesday, and this Wednesday went up against Courtney Morton and Andrew Hayes. We had a lock game at the Double Jeopardy round. Andrew had 25-2, Mike 24, and Courtney 42, and this clue in Around the World. The online article says this landmark says the stones themselves look like they are crying and mentioned tears of pain and hope and joy. I, as a Jew, am an idiot when it came to this particular clue because I went Easter Island.
Oh, Jason.
I know.
It's the way you had a brain fart.
Yes.
The correct response is, what is the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall?
Correct.
Gordon?
Well, I'm going to go in that same vein that I did on that first one. You're going to see the common theme here. What is Brave Charging Grave Girl after she gets trampled over by a herd of bears? I don't know if there is such a thing called a herd of bears, but a whole bunch of them.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Going.
Okay. Herd of bears there. All right. Well,
And why not? Why can't we not have a herd of bears?
We can have a herd of bears.
I want a herd of bears.
Okay. Well, it was a rough game going, but Andrew Hayes is returning with a total of $25,200 after locking the game away. So congratulations to him. While we're on the subject of Jeopardy, two of the game's greats made a stop-off on another TV show last week. And that, of course, would be Top Chef.
Right. And with Top Chef, we get a crossover of epic proportions. Okay.
Yes.
In
the quick fire, three teams of four, the chefs competed in a trivia game hosted by actor and guest judge Michael Cera and Jeopardy champions Mattea Roach and Amy Schneider.
Mattea Roach, Canadian. Also, you also have, you know, as many puns. Okay. Amy Schneider, activist, and also pretty cool.
The answer to each question was associated with an ingredient, and after 15 questions, the team with the most correct answers received 30 minutes of cooking time, while the second and third place teams received 20 and 15 minutes. The teams, by the way, with 30 minutes, the green team of Cesar, Corwin, Shuai, and Vinny. With 20 minutes, the purple team of Lana, Massimo, Paula, and Zubert. And with 15 minutes, the yellow team of Henry, Kat, Katiana, and Tristan. Winner, Corwin, with his 30 minutes to make a seared scallop with chili crisp and ginger fleur blanc, shrimp paste, yuzu, and shiso. So, now we go to the elimination challenge, and the chefs have to use Canadian desserts as an inspiration for savory dishes. The desserts: Figgy Duff, chocolate potato cake, butter tarts — I've had those, they're delicious — date squares, jam jams, and Nanaimo bars. Each dessert was assigned by a random draw, and the dishes were served at Casa Loma to the judges, guest judge Michael Serra, pastry chefs Stephanie Duong and Lenore Johnson. The winner receives immunity from the next elimination challenge. And the winner, with a Figgy Duff pepper pot with braised lamb, lamb fat, madeleine, and pickled grapes, Tristan.
Yay!
Unfortunately, with a butter tart seared duck breast with shirmal, pecan, and cashew korma, Zubair is heading to Last Chance Kitchen for the mid-season finale. And this is what they had to do. The chefs had 1 hour to make a savory dish and a sweet dish. In addition, both dishes had to incorporate at least three of the same ingredients. After 30 minutes, the contestants were required to present their savory dish to Tom Colicchio. The winner of the savory course was allowed to continue on to the dessert. The loser was forced to remake their savory dish until it met Tom's standards. The winner returned to the main competition and received immunity for their first elimination challenge back. That person, with a honey pork and fennel caponata and a fennel pollen honey panna cotta with golden raisin and pine nut relish and honeycomb, Bailey. Congratulations. Unfortunately, that
she returns to the main competition.
Yes, Zubair is going to the house.
So Tristan and Bailey will both have immunity in next week's challenge.
Correct.
Okay. It's time to go to the workroom, and yeah, we call this one too.
One word. Vegas!
Right. So, the final five had to sell themselves as a star in the RuPaul's Drag Race Live in Las Vegas. Okay?
Yes, in front of guest judge Tracy Ellis Ross. The winner would not only get immunity from elimination, but would also get a spot in RuPaul's Drag Race Live, currently performing in Las Vegas. You know where in Las Vegas?
Yeah, at the I think it was at the Flamingo, but I think it's somewhere else.
Yeah, it's in the Flamingo. It's in the Flamingo.
Yes, it is. Yep. It is at the Mango Hotel. Yes, correct. Yeah. Now,
so part
here's
of
the interesting thing, Gordon. Now, again, they had to do so many different things here, Gordon. Okay? And they had to.
They had to do a photo shoot, promo film, and performing RuPaul's Gift Shop. They have to do all of those things and more.
Yeah, they had to with the pit crew, and they had to interview with Latrice Royale, and they had to do an opulent outerwear runway category. And here is the interesting thing, and she, the person who went home, and we're going to spoil it now, it's Susie Two, said the one thing she should have not said, Gordon, I'm not interested in Vegas.
Bull.
Right, Gordon?
Right. Yep, and that's really, really, really dumb, and that's why she's leaving.
Right. Because she basically said, I don't not think so, I'm not interested. Once you did that, you were like, okay. The episode was over in like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? It's like, so why are you here?
Yeah.
Right.
That is the, that's the textbook example of how not to play the game.
Right. So it was Jules Sparkles who won the whole thing. And Sam Starr and Susie Two were in the bottom. And you had...
They had the lip sync of the Supremes' Love Child.
Great song, by the way.
It is a great song. And Mama Ruth thought that Sam's performance was better. I agree. Now, before this episode, Susie...
Again, based on what Susie Toot said at the beginning of the episode, Sam Starr could have read the phone book and she would have been okay.
Yeah, Susie Toot was actually in with a chance until this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what are you doing?
Girl, what is you doing?
Really? What are you doing?
Girl, what is Girl. You doing?
Yeah, it was... It's like when the survivor, it's the same thing like the survivor contestants. Well, I don't want to be here. I quit. Why?
Speaking of which, that's a good segue.
That is a good segue.
Oh, by the way, I think we're going to get a non-elimination next week.
Do you think we're going to get a non-elimination on Drag Race next week?
Well, yeah, because it's the final four. We may get the SmackDown Lollapalooza for the eliminated queens, you know, that sort of thing.
I think the next episode is just a SmackDown.
We shall see.
Yeah, the SmackDown, and then the week after is the finale where either Anya Nerve or Sam Starr wins the whole thing.
We shall see.
Yes, but speaking of SmackDown, we have a whole lot of Smack Talk on Survivor this week, where we have everybody going to Tribal, because we split the 12 remaining tribesmates into two groups of six. Both groups are going to go to Tribal, but the player who lasts the longest in the immunity challenge would guarantee their entire team a spot on the jury. Jason, please elaborate.
Yeah, so what happens is that the losing team is going to go first. First person and the last person the person who gets voted out will be the last non-jury member. Okay? So, on the purple team, we have David, Mary, Cedric, Sean, Kyle, and Camilla. Eva, Joe, Star, Cy, Mitch, and Chrissy were on orange. The winners and the last person who remain will also win the food reward, which I believe was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You know how I love my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Okay, so I believe David and Joe both went over an hour on this.
Yeah, compare that to Cedric, who dropped at it for 15 seconds.
Right. And David won the whole thing because Joe finally dropped. So the first team to go into Tribal was Eva, Joe, Star, Cy, Mitch, and Chrissy. Now, boy, both these votes were very anticlimactic because Cy didn't even have a vote.
Yep, it was.
And I believe people knew it.
Yeah, she didn't have a vote. Everybody knew it, and everybody went after Cy, and Cy was voted out unanimously. 5-0. Because Mitch blocked her vote.
Mitch actually used his block your vote?
Yes.
Okay. And then on the second team, David, Cedric, Mary, Shaheen, Kyle, and Camilla, Cedric was out 5-1. with Cedric only voting for Shaheen. Now, Gordon, this was absolutely culling the herd. Because both these two people were not going to win Survivor. Both these people didn't have a shot in hell. And they both deserved to go.
Well, you can't say they didn't have a shot. You can say that their gameplay put them in their this position for them to go bye-bye. Because we've seen people just stick around. Oh, wait, you won. But, yeah, it didn't look like they were... That all being said, from the gameplay that they had earlier, it really didn't look like any of them were even remotely close to be making it to the end. You can't say they weren't going to win. You can say their social game was pretty rotten.
Their social game was incredibly rotten.
Yep, and Cedric, his immunity performance didn't help matters, like, at all. So if you want to talk about being marked for death, Cedric was marked for death.
Well, I'm not even going to do that. I mean, you have both of their alliances, and I mean, I guess the irony here is that they're both leaving on the same episode.
Yes.
And how's Mary doing again?
Mary's still
hanging in there.
Mary under the radar.
That's what I'm saying.
Just like she's hiding out, hiding in the bushes, just trying not to call attention to herself, because she knows if she does, she's going home.
Well, we'll see. So far, so good. But we go from island hopping to island hopping by a plane.
Well, not island hopping. Peninsula hopping.
Oh, yeah.
That is true. Peninsula hopping by a plane.
United Arab Emirates is a peninsula, my friend.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, one of the things we do before the show is discuss what we're going to talk about. And Jay and I discussed this, and Jay brought up something interesting. This is perhaps the most normal leg of this race that we've seen in a while. And it brought back a twist that I thought should never have been thrown to the dust heap in the first place. So let's start off with everybody flying to Dubai in the UAE. And once there, teams have to travel to a Bedouin camp in Mokab Platinum Heritage Desert Gate, select the release time, and that next morning, they ride camels into the desert to their next clue.
Except, the first four teams got 5:10, certain teams got 5:20, and certain teams got 5:30.
Yes, which is another thing that I've missed from races past. You have these equalizers with these sign-up boards denoting which time, first come, first serve, that sort of thing.
First roadblock, one team member had to perform a tandem skydive over Dubai at the Palm Resort, which, by the way, was gorgeous, to receive their next clue, and the first team to get down there and find an orange 2025 Audi e-tron sedan, by the way, which, if you remember The Price is Right, that was the car that was given away on 10 Chances.
Yeah, remember that? This isn't part of that. Just so we're clear, this is not part of the roadblock. The roadblock was the tandem skydive at the Palms Resort Skydive Dubai airstrip. Hidden in the same envelope is a fast forward. Who remembers the fast forward?
Me.
Yes.
You explain it to the class?
The fast forward allows you, if you decide to go out of your way and do the challenge, to go directly to the pit stop afterwards. Do not pass go. Do not collect 200. Do not do any other task if you successfully complete it. And if you happen to be the first team to complete it.
except for in this fast forward, only one team got a shot at it.
Yes, and that team
was Carson and Jack.
Yep, Carson and Jack, they got the shot. I believe they did claim the fast forward.
Yes, they traveled to Deep Dive Dubai. And what they had to do was they had to scuba dive through a hidden city and find the hidden fast forward, what you call a trophy or brick? What would you call that? Trophy?
Trinket. Yes, you'd have to find it in the world's deepest diving pool, in the world's deepest city, for the Trinket Award Trophy Fast Forward thing. Carson and Jack win it.
And then they get a clue, and then they take their orange Audi e-tron to the Museum of the Future and finish first and win a 7-day Alaskan cruise courtesy of Travelocity, I believe, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Let's go back to
the other teams.
Yes.
Okay. So the other teams have to then go to the Atlantis Royal and have to add garnishes to an afternoon tea platter, which was sent to them, which was the challenge was administered by Christophe Devoile, pastry chef at the Atlantis Dubai. I checked him out. Cool dude. So then they went to Burj Al Arab Public Beach. And in the second roadblock, one team member, by the way, a team member could have performed both roadblocks if they wanted to, which was interesting. They had to surf on an e-foil electric surfboard, which is worth about $13,000, past three buoys before receiving their next clue, and had to take a taxi to the Mall of Emirates Metro Station and then buy Dubai Metro and then go to the pit stop, which is the Museum of the Future. Now, the last two teams were
Nick and Mike and Pops and Jeff.
Right. Now, Pops and Jeff could have gotten on the Metro and won and gotten into seventh and eliminated Nick and Mike. However, they hesitated and they had to wait another 4 minutes before a new Metro would show up. Nick and Mike caught up and passed them to get into seventh. So Pops and Jeff were eliminated. And boy, Jeff was not happy with himself.
I totally get that. I mean, this is a race for $1 million. You can't afford to hesitate. I mean, you've seen enough rounds of Race Game where somebody hesitated and they did not win all four prizes.
Same he who hesitates is lost, which he, is what happened.
Yep, there you go.
And next week, the teams fly to Bulgaria with Gordon, another regular episode, but this time it's a normal U-turn, not the public vote one, which means they're actually getting back to business.
Yay. Maybe.
Woohoo!
Which they may recover. But speaking of business, we have the business end, the date book, and all the Brain Vision news. And in Act 3, we're going to have an extreme game over.
Yep, we're making...
Oh, Chico, take us to the news.
Somehow heartbreak feels good in a place like this. We're making game shows better on the other side of this break. With Gordon Pepper and Jason Block, I'm Chico Alexander. Stick and stay with 501, your home, where we love to interrupt. You give us 22 minutes.
And we're going to give you 22 ways that Chico is going to say, Gordon, you are the best at March Madness again.
I called Florida to win, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but you had that the only one on your Final Four. I had all Final Fours. That gives me enough cushion, even though Duke did not win.
Say that
and
again.
Yes, Duke, you're all doing win sprints. All of you win sprints.
Hey, who wants to bet that Cooper Flagg is going to the NBA next season?
Oh, he will.
Yeah,
oh, he will.
And he's going to flame
not
out.
Not one more season.
And he's going to flame out, believe me. Anyway,
we'll be back after this.
It is 41.
This is Wayne Brady. Talking to someone about how you feel may be the most difficult thing in the world. People go through this, and you're not alone in the fight. Help starts with a conversation.
WLTI has been brought to you by the crossover that everyone wants if you like train wrecks. Because Top Chef Canada meets Epic Mealtime. Whee! All the chef testers have to create something worth at least 10 to 15,000 calories. Because we want to see how many Top Chefs can make the judges vomit. Ever want to see Tom Colicchio explode? Now's the time. That is Top Chef meets Epic Mealtime.
I miss
the question
Halloween.
The question is, what is up, Chucky?
I miss Harley.
Aww.
Because we're out. Hey,
yeah, they don't do Epic Mealtime anymore. So
yeah,
they do not.
I will say it. Round here, I'm the sauce boss.
No, Epic Mealtime, a classic. It was one of the best. I still miss that show, but I don't miss the Brain Vision News. So roll that beautiful brain footage.
From the four corners of the globe to your frontal lobe, this is WLTI Brain Vision News with Chico Alexander, Gordon Pepper, and the award-winning Brain Vision News team.
Thank you very much, Doug Morse. As always, you can follow Doug Morse on all social media, Doug Morse Games, at Rock 104 Rock Tracks, and at Tracks Productions. And you can listen to Doug Morse every Sunday as he hosts Rock Tracks with Doug Morse from high atop his palatial estate in the Pine Belt on Rock 104 Rock Tracks. That is Rock 104 WXRR Hattiesburg 104.5 on your FM dial and all over the known
multiverse
on rock104fm.com. That's live stream and Odyssey and Rock 104 apps. One take, son.
So I see one bat with the Netflix symbol, and what the hell is the second bat?
Second bat is it's Alton Brown's name is crossed off, and Brian Malarkey is written in its place. This will all make sense.
Oh, okay.
It's business. It's business time.
I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh.
It's business. It's business.
Okay, so while you were not looking, Food Network decided to reboot Cutthroat Kitchen. So
what?
Did they have anything with Epic Mealtime staff?
No. Yes, Cutthroat Kitchen Knives Out will launch Tuesday, May 13th at 9, right after the night's episode of Chopped. And in for host, instead of Alton Brown, Brian Malarkey.
Maybe that's a good choice. I mean, I love Alton Brown, but Brian Malarkey, he's a lot of fun, too.
He's a lot of fun, and he's very sly.
He is a chef.
He's very sly.
That's right. Wow, he has a lot of... He's also been a judge on, according to the press release, Ice Grocery Games, Chopped, 2024 and 24, Last Chef Standing. He was also on two series Oh, wow, on a winning manner. Yeah, so, yeah, that's a damn good choice, Gordon. Damn good choice.
Resume is very good.
Resume is incredibly good.
I'm guessing Alton Brown is retired from the Food Network, perhaps?
I could not tell you.
You're about retired, but he's got a lot of stuff on his plate.
Indeed he does.
Yes.
He does. Meanwhile,
so maybe he needs one less thing.
Maybe. I mean, we all need one less thing otherwise we get burned out, you know.
So what is this Netflix thing about Monopoly?
Okay, so last month, Monopoly was being shopped as a reality show. Netflix has bought the Monopoly reality show. Deadline is reporting that the streamer has landed the competition series adaptation of the board game after a very competitive bidding process.
Okay.
So nothing's known about what they plan on doing with it yet, but I believe that information will come in due course. By the way,
we shall see.
By the way, not the first time Monopoly's been on television. We've had the ABC show from 1991, and of course the lottery-based game with our good friend
Monopoly Millionaires Club with Mike
Billy, with our good friend Billy Gardell and our other good friend Todd Newton.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
So again,
but
really good
I
stuff.
Have the right, and we have a date book that's coming now, and we're getting tomorrow a live dating show called. Actually, I'll also start something else. Tonight was Pat McAfee's big night out in Pittsburgh, where. Using a lot of game show elements has given away a lot of money to a lot of people. Thursday is Pop the Balloon Live, a dating show on Netflix. Friday is Got to Get Out, which is the celebrity escape room, which we're going to be reviewing next week. Great American Baking Show. Sunday is the $100,000 Pyramid with Anna Gasteyer, Kevin Nealon, Scott Wolf, and Atsuko Okatsuka. Monday is the lots of GSN stuff with Beat the Bridge, the premiere of Tic-Tac-Toe, premiere of Bingo Blitz, both of which we'll be reviewing. I think we're going to have a full capsule review segment next week. Rhythm and Flow Italy and Rock the Block. And Wednesday is Last One Laughing Colombia on Prime. But, of course, let's talk about Dat App, though.
Okay, so Warner Brothers, if you remember, has dealt with a lot of SVOD or fast channels, and one of them is the Love Channel on Pluto and Tubi, and guess what they just added to Tubi's Love Channel?
Ooh, I know.
It's this.
Chico's favorite show of all time.
Yep. It's The Bachelor.
Whee!
Now you can have The Bachelor anytime you want.
And The Bachelorette.
And The Bachelorette, too. Hell, let's put all of Bachelor Nation on fast streaming service.
I think we should.
I mean...
We'll be there eventually.
The events of the last 3 years aside, it's a really smart decision. I mean... You have
As much as we make fun and harpoon it, it gets the ratings. And again, if you want to see where this is from a generational standpoint, you know, you could see the original Bachelor and Company. So it is a smart choice.
It is a smart choice.
This not so smart.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Mickey Rourke.
Welcome to Dumb Decisions.
That's dumb.
You're so dumb. You are really dumb. For real.
Are you smarter than Mickey Rourke? And this is a late-breaking story. Jay, I believe you have all the info on that.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not going to use a certain word that he used, so don't bleep it out. Don't bleep me, okay?
Don't dump you out. Same. Got it.
Okay. So, in a homophobic exchange on tonight's Big Brother UK episode... Which, by the way, they're back. Jojo Siwa told Mickey Rourke that she is gay, to which he shouted across the courtyard, "If I stay longer than 4 days, you won't be gay anymore." And then he announced he needed a cigarette, stating that he needed a cigarette in the British term, which I'm not going to use, okay? And then he said to Siwa, he says, "I'm not talking to you." Okay. And they're calling for him to go away, but Mickey, you're going to be out on your own, and you've been weird for a long time. That's just dumb, stupid,
yep.
Moronic.
And Big Brother has a message for Mickey. Mickey Rourke was reprimanded on Celebrity Big Brother UK after using a homophobic slur toward fellow housemate JoJo Siwa. Mickey, do you understand how this language could be offensive to your housemates or the viewing public? And he's like, yeah, I think so. If I was saying it in a nasty kind of way, or if I truly meant it. And Big Brother adds, as a result, Big Brother is giving you a formal warning. Further language or behavior of this nature could lead to you being removed from the Big Brother house. Now, he is given an opportunity to say something following the warning. He says, I apologize. I don't have dishonorable intentions. I'm just talking smack, you know? I wasn't taking it all so serious. I didn't mean it any bad intentions, and if I did, sorry. Pretty much said the same thing to JoJo Siwa later.
Now, is this a series where you're voted out by your peers or by the public?
I believe it's by the public.
Yeah, bye, Mickey.
Yeah. You
Mickey
really...
go bye-bye, and he can have some hatery on the way out.
Hatery!
Yep, and this haterade, we have Zombies in Love.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Okay, so during and for a little bit after Dancing with the Stars, Brooks Nader and Gleb Shevchenko were an item, for lack of a better word. They were an item. Brooks Nader blindsides him by breaking up with him. A source has told Us Weekly that on April 7th, Brooks and Gleb are officially done. Brooks was the one who ended things with Gleb, who shared earlier this year on social media how he could envision himself having a baby with Brooks in the near future.
Whoops.
Yeah, meanwhile, Gleb Shevchenko, he says, he learns that Brooks Nader dumped him from a news article. He says, in a statement, I was surprised to learn through an article published today that Brooks had ended our relationship. The last communication I received from her was a text on April 6th asking to speak. I called her today in response, but she has not replied.
And I'm going to guess you're not going to hear much of a reply.
Nope, you're not.
Nope. Congratulations, Gleb. You've just been ghosted.
Yes, and by the way, where are we sending Mickey Rourke and all these people that we just mentioned?
New Zealand's nice this time of year.
A little cold, but okay.
Been around the world and I can't find my baby. I don't know when, I don't know why he's gone.
Okay, so, The Chase, big hit in the UK, big hit in America, is coming to New Zealand. TVNZ has greenlit a version to play from the studios in Sydney, Australia, which means that Kiwis who want to play on the show may face off against an army of chasers led by our good friend, the governess, Anne Hegarty. We have a lot of good friends on this show.
We do.
But yeah, this is just, it's a really good show. It's being expanded, it's being enhanced, and I am here for it.
More chasers, more better. More media pros.
I got pros. I got pros. In different area. Area code. Pros. In different area code.
And this week's Media Pro Report, Mr. Beast calls out companies who withhold a lot of profits and also who only give away so much money to have half of it taken away due to taxes, because that's how game show works, ladies and gentlemen. And he also calls out the presidents for his tariffs, which he went back on a day before they were to be instituted.
And by the way, he also called out the tariffs specifically because a lot of his chocolate is made in West Africa.
There you go. Teeny Chitty Chio from Survivor comes out as a trans man. Valerie Bertinelli recalls going to therapy to deal with being a young actor.
Many game show elements were used in tonight's Pat McAfee's Big Night Out in Pittsburgh.
Carla Moseley returns to The Price is Right to plug Beyond the Gates and also do a little light modeling on the side. Colin Jost on the Russell Brand Chris Brown episode of SNL says, "We really know how to pair them up." Clayton Etcher calls out Gabby Windy for bullying, to which Gabby replied, "Oh, you're calling me out for bullying, and you went on television to discuss our sex life. That's rich." Alan Cumming is happy that a 5-hour makeup job 20 years ago now takes 90 minutes. He's, of course, referring to his role as Nightcrawler in Avengers Doomsday. Francesca Farrago, star of Perfect Match, Too Hot to Handle, and Love is Blind, is allegedly been paid to post hate on Hailey Bieber's social feed. And we lost both Jay North, Dennis the Menace, and Alice Tan Ridley from America's Got Talent this week. But none of them are your pros of the week. Oh, wait a minute. Pat Sajak and Maggie Sajak were in the crowd when OV hit number 895. I forgot about that. Sorry. But none of them.
That was kind of cool. Well, you know, Pat Sajak is, I believe, lifelong season ticket holders that are capped, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're correct. But none of them is your pros of the week. And I have it right here. MasterChef has been renewed for season 15 with a brand new judge. Tiffany Derry.
Who I've seen on many.
Chopped, Bar Rescue, Cutthroat Kitchen, Worst Cooks, Bobby's Triple Threat, Great American Recipe. Yeah, she's been everywhere.
Top Chef.
And honestly, I'm just saying this, it also checks the diversity box, but in a very good way, because she is a very, very talented female African-American chef. Very cool.
She's one of James Beard's best.
Yes, which is awesome. That's so good. So good.
Yeah. Look for season 15, Dynamic Duos, the theme, this summer.
And those are your pros.
And this is Brain Vision. Jason, if you would, please.
Coming right now.
All right. Still to...
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, so now that we've made our studio better, we're going to go out and make a whole lot of other game shows better. And that is coming up when we play Extreme Game Over here on We Love to Interrupt on 5N1. We will be right back. We'll be right back. WLTI is presented by Pop the Bottles Live. Yes, we all know that dating on Netflix is fun. Balloons are fun. But balloons are also scary and somewhat violent. What's better than popping balloons live on a dating show on Netflix? Popping bottles of champagne live on Netflix. Because everybody knows, if you want to have a successful dating show, you need alcohol. You must be over 21 to participate, because 21 means 21, damn it. That is Pop the Bottles Live. We don't drink. Just to let you know.
No, we don't. Which is fine, because we're working on fixing, maybe getting like a new bar cart or something that has water in it. Anyway, this is Extreme Game Over, and this is really simple. We talk about something that we think may need some fixing, and then we talk about how we're fixing it.
For example, Million Dollar Secret. Can you fix the show that we said there was a game in there last week, despite it being incredibly flawed? And how would you fix it?
Well, I would fix it in this way. Make some stakes if you have the $1 million case. For argument's sake, if everybody votes and nobody votes that person has a $1 million case, they win the game. Or do something to that effect. Yes, you're going to lose episodes, but at least have a reason for someone to have the $1 million case and to have that as a benefit and not a detraction.
Yeah. So you're basically saying, in order to fix the $1 million secret, go all in on ripping off the traitors.
Yay! Yes.
And or try this. If you can hold the $1 million case to the end from the beginning, it gets doubled.
I like that. I like that a lot. By the way, Kara Keys, the millionaire after episode 5.
9.
Is an actual millionaire now, having $1 million secret.
Yes. Okay. Next one.
All right. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. That lovely thing that we're considering a film earlier on this week. The Luckiest Man in America. Or the most unluckiest moviegoers in America, depending on what you look at it. How are we fixing this?
Tell the daggone story, and you know what? Don't limit it to just one day simply because it's artistic. Tell the whole story. Tell what happened before.
Yeah.
Tell what happened after. Tell what happened after that. It's not hard, people.
Right. In other words, believe it or not, him winning the money was the least boring story of his life. Strangely enough. If you expand
the most boring part of it, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with Jay. Make this, you don't need to embellish the truth on this one. The truth is strange enough as it is.
The truth can be a funny thing, you know.
Okay. I have one. The Wheel of Fortune $1 million bonus has not been won since September 2014. How do we fix this? Or can we? Or should we?
I don't think we can. I don't think we should, because frankly, this is the most organic way to win $1 million on television right now. If that makes any sense.
I don't think it should be fixed in that way. I think that if you want to win it, you got to earn it.
I happen to agree. I'm just because it has not been won in almost 11 years now. That's crazy.
Indeed.
It is crazy, but it's fun.
But when it happens,
is absolutely fun.
But when it happens, there's always that modicum of excitement.
Modicum. A lot more than a modicum.
It's more than a modicum.
I like that word.
You like that
word? I like that word a lot.
Okay.
Yes.
Modicum.
Yes.
All right, I got one now.
Okay. The Jeopardy postseason. Everybody was really upset in season 40. Not so much in season 41. Is it worth? Do we need to fix this? Do we have tournament fatigue?
No, I don't think there's any more tournament fatigue, because here's the thing that you have to understand about season 40. The way season 40 was done was born out of necessity, because season 40 was shot smack dab in the middle of the writer's strike. They were not going to get any new material until the writers got back in the room. And yet they still had to make programs because they were not covered by that deal, or at least a similar deal with another guild. So they were still beholden to the syndicators for more product. So they had tournament after tournament after tournament. The way they're doing it right now is actually rather genius. You have the wild cards they have the second chance that feeds into the wild cards. The wild cards feed into the Tournament of Champions, and the Tournament of Champions feeds into the Masters. It's actually pretty genius now.
Believe it or not, I get that.
Do you think we have tournament fatigue or no?
I don't think we have tournament fatigue anymore.
No, I absolutely don't.
Okay, I agree with you too. I agree with you, don't I? Think the people who have tournament fatigue are in a minority, so to speak, the loud vocal minority. And I think we're in a pattern where it's going to be. And again, Chico, the ratings have held up, yes?
Very much so. In fact, hey, look what I got. I got ratings. All right, from March 3rd
okay.
to March, from March 3rd to March 9th, Jeopardy is the most watched show in syndication, if not in all of television, with 8.9 million total viewers. Second only to Wheel of Fortune, who is up to 8.5 million total viewers.
Yeah, I wonder why that is, Ryan Seacrest.
Everybody loves Ryan Seacrest. Wheel of Fortune.
Ryan Seacrest. No, dude, I never said I disliked Ryan Seacrest. Oh my god, gee Louise, Ryan Seacrest is having a monster first year, my friends. Really. He has.
Yeah, I mean, he's making the show his own. They're making the show around him. We had iHeart Radio Week this week on Wheel of Fortune. It's working to his strengths. And by the way, we're going to talk about Friday's show next week on Wheel of Fortune. So
it's a tournament week this week.
It is.
Okay, Chico, do you have another one?
This season on The Amazing Race, this week was actually very good. Do we fix the season by making the rest of the race like this week?
Yes. Yes, because what's been happening is that they tried to do too much in the beginning to try and attract people. Amazing Race... Again, we talked about it last week. The last few performances have found that one team dominated and the other teams could never catch up. I believe that was the last two or three seasons, right? And just incredibly dominant performances. They tried to fix that, but I think they went too far in the pendulum swing. If they can find the right balance, they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that, Gordon?
I'm not sure if I completely agree with it. I think some of your points are sound, but I think some of the other ones are best in execution.
Okay.
All right, Chico, next one.
That was my next one.
No, Chico.
One.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jay. I thought that was yours. I'll go next.
You got the last one,
my
friend.
Oh, okay. I have the last one. Doink! That's right, this is six, isn't it? Derp, I can't count. All right, since it is getting some press, and it is Chico's favorite show, The Bachelor and or Bachelorette series.
Put it out of its misery. Wow. It's had its time. It's a caricature now. I'm ready to be done with it.
Honestly, no. I'm going to say something that's going to be a little controversial, okay? Stop casting influencers with fake boobs and
OnlyFans, you know, accounts.
Yeah, and OnlyFans accounts. And actually cast real effing people. Pardon my language. Cast real people who really want to be in love. You had a glimpse of that with the Golden Bachelor before all the mishigas at the end. If you cast real people, you can revitalize the franchise. By the way, cast people who have pot bellies. Cast people who have, you know, handicaps. Cast real people. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Look, it's a different show, though. But I do.
Uh-huh. Remember Average Joe? Mm-hmm. That was heartwarming. Mm-hmm. You got people with bald spots, people with guts, but at the end of the day, they were all very, very likable, and you wanted to root for all of them. Nowadays, mm-hmm. not so much.
There you go. On that note, that ends Extreme Game Over. We got one more break, and then speed rounding.
WLTI is presented by Beat the Bingo Dough Bridge. Yes, we have three really good shows coming down the pike on GSN this Monday. But what would happen if you combine elements of Beat the Bridge, Tic-Tac-Dough, and Bingo Blitz? You would get, I'm not going to lie to you, you would get a complete mess. That is the...
I want Rapping Dragon! I want Rapping Dragon!
Get him out of here! That is beat...
But you know what we can get right now? We can get a speed round. Now! Survivor! Who's next?
That is a good question, because we just cult the herd. It's like, who is the last one? It's like, who is the weakest link in this tribe? Because everybody's, I think, has just been cold. Mitch might want to underplay his hand.
Yes, and it's maybe star two, potentially.
Uh-huh.
RuPaul's Drag Race. Do we get the
I think
Lollapalooza, SmackDown?
I think we get the SmackDown.
Who do you think wins?
Not Susie 2.
I can easily see this being a non-elimination show and they go to a Final Four.
Another one? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as we've proven on Drag Race, anything.
We got a U-turn next week on The Amazing Race. Will that help Nick and Mike? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Somebody's going to try and knock them out early, and it's going to be a rough go at it for them to come back. But we shall see.
You know. And by the way, remember we were talking about dominating performances. Carson and Jack have only finished below second once during this race so far.
Love to see it.
Yeah, we do. Top Chef, is it still too early?
Not really. I mean, we're getting back to Bayley going back into the contest and being immune. But the question is, how long is she going to last? I think she's going to last a little bit.
I don't know, but right now, the only people right now who are on perfect at the moment are Cesar with one win, Corwin with two wins, Tatiana with one win, Lana, Chuai, Tristan, and Vinny. So, we'll see.
We shall indeed.
Do I have a Top Chef? Amazing. Jeopardy! We had a three-time champion defeated. What do we get another super run, or who knows?
Not quite yet. I think we're gonna just, you know, be very demure, very mindful, very Wheel of Champions going into the May sweep.
Oh, we have a final Celebrity Jeopardy quarterfinal. Who's in that, and who do you think is going to... Let's see. Hold on here, because I have this. Okay, here we are. We have Mina Kimes, Sean Gunn, and David Friedberg going for the final, or the last spot in the final. Who's getting in? I have an idea. I think it's Mina Kimes.
God, Jake, get out of my head, will ya?
She's good.
She's really good. And I can't wait to see her.
You know what I can't see? What I can't wait to see? Mail.
I got a message here from Brian Sapinski. Ooh. Hi, Brian. Any chance...
Okay.
By the way, he was responding to last week's March Madness show. Any chance of expanding this to cover a full decade? We always talk about the best, so doing the worst is a bit refreshing. Thanks, first of all. Thanks for the message, Brian. And thanks for the suggestion. You know what? And if we get to a point where we're actually about to celebrate episode 500, this might be something we'll look into.
Best and worst shows of 500 episodes. Wow, that's something to prep for. But of course, if you want to talk about us, we can talk about us on all the socials. On X, you can find me at Beat the Block number 2.
Yeah, I am on Blue Sky at Dino R. Alexander.
And I am GSNN Haterade.
And of course, the network is at 5&1net, and our show is at Game Show News Net. And we use our 5&1net, number 5, ANDONENET, to talk about anything and everything network wide. What's going on the NAWC, Jay?
Well, we are a week away from WrestleMania, and the card is coming into shape, and it's a decent shape. We've got a couple of interesting main events going on, and we will talk about the road therein, and old, and a bit of a controversial joke made by the Kill Tony host about Big E's neck, which we'll talk about. Another controversial remark that Swerve Strickland responded to, on AEW Dynasty, and again, the road to WrestleMania happens. We are not going to do live cast, but we're going to do post game shows each night, the 19th and the 20th.
Awesome. Okay,
Gordon, and of course you and I, Chico, will be on a week from this coming Thursday.
Well,
actually, 2 weeks.
2 weeks from this coming Thursday.
That's right. 2 weeks from this coming Thursday, as we will be covering the first round live of the NFL draft from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
From the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Only it's not frozen.
Not in April. But it's going to be, and then the road to Santa Clara, right?
Yes.
This year?
Yes.
The road to Santa Clara starts up, and then we've got about 3 months before training camp and 4 months before preseason. Oh my God.
2025 is moving crazy. By way too fast. Way too
Gordon,
fast.
Gordon, the UBA, is it moving on way too fast too?
It's never moving on too fast. It's moving on just right. April 19th, title match, Douglas Arron versus Darien LeMay for the vacant Northeast Heavyweight Championship.
Okay.
Should be a blast.
Oh, breaking news that just broke. The mother of Gabrielle Sidibe and America's Got Talent contestant Alice Tan Ridley has passed away at the age of 72.
Huh?
She was on America's Got Talent in 2010.
Yeah, season 5, yes. I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah, season 5, yes. So.
Very
sad. So, that's all we have for this week. Chico, what do we got next week?
Next week, we are reviewing all the things. We are talking about Tic-Tac-Toe, Bingo Blitz, Pop the Balloon Live, which is going to stand out as a winner, which is going to stand out as a loser, and which is just going to stand out as existing. Plus, everything that happened on Jeopardy, Top Chef, Drag Race, Survivor, and The Amazing Race, and of course, the Friday final on Wheel of Fortune, which we haven't had in 30 years, if my math is correct.
No. Actually, we had fan favorite tournaments last year.
Oh yeah. See, you keep me honest, Jay. I appreciate you.
Someone has to.
Okay.
You do it to me all the time.
Yeah. Hey. That's what family does. And hopefully,
indeed,
you'll look out for us next time. Until then, for Gordon Pepper and Jason Block, my name is Chico Alexander. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. Game over. And spread the love.
Good night.